I'm here with Gabrielle from 2110, the Center for Gender Advocacy. Hello, Gabrielle. How are you?
Hey, hi.
Gabrielle's here to talk with us about the amendment to the Aeronautic Act that came into effect in August of 2011. Gabrielle, do you want to tell us a little bit about the amendment?
Yes, very interesting thing that happened there. Our friends in power right now made an amendment without presenting it to Parliament to the Aeronautic Act, where they added in Section 5.2, they added one thing that is very problematic for a lot of people. This article that they added was that the passenger does not appear to be of the gender indicated on the identifications he or she presented. Well, that person won't be allowed to board any plane. And that's a regulation now in force in Canada.
We have the amendment here. It states, an air carrier shall not transport a passenger if the passenger does not appear to be of the gender indicated on the identification he or she presents.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what this means?
I think that the principle under which the Harper government has tried to put that in, change the law or the regulation, was to try to ensure security. So what they're basically trying to say is people who are working at boarding desks will have to make a judgment call to see if whatever paper you present matches with the gender identity that you present. So if your paper are male, that person will have to make the judgment call to say, okay, do I think that you're a male? And same thing for a female. Now, this is quite problematic for a whole bunch of reasons. The main one is for anybody within trans communities. Trans communities include transgender people, transsexual people, but also gender nonconforming people also. During different processes, during different transitions, your appearance might not be what other people believe to be either male or female, even if your legal papers say otherwise. So those people pretty much are banned from boarding planes because this is a regulation. And Air Canada actually confirmed that in one letter to one trans activist in the West who wrote to Air Canada to say, here's my situation. I am trans. I'm in a transition process right now. I might not appear as the gender that my legal paper are saying, so what's going to happen if I try to board a plane? Well, Air Canada pretty much said, we have to obey federal regulation, so you're not going to be able to board a plane. So That's pretty much what they had to say. In practice, we're talking about a ban, a discriminatory regulation that will lead to people being banned from using airplane or flight services.
Can you tell us what is the difference between transgender, transsexual, and gender nonconformative, just so that we have a better idea of what you're explaining?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So why do we have different terms. I must start by saying that those terms, whatever definition I'll give you, is very general, and it's still an ongoing discussion that we have even within trans communities. And that's pretty much why I'm using trans instead of transgender or transsexual, because there's different understanding. Transsexual, for example, are people who want to make a transition, so want to make a journey from one gender norm to another, or one gender identity to another, and are at different levels okay with those norms. They want to appear female. They want to appear male. They want to have their gender marker changed on their paper. They want to have their legal name changed. So they want to live a fully either male or female life without being bothered, which bring often the concept of stealth within transsexual communities where people do a transition, and when the transition is done, they just pretty much disappear from the trans radar, if I can say the trans radar. Then you have transgender, which is often seen as an umbrella term, and I think it's pretty valid, which includes a wider variety of people. Some people that might want body modification or not, might want legal paper to be changed or not, might want to be identified full-time to one gender or to the other or not. So I think there's more of a variety is wider, and also the yearn to comply or, you know, to obey by some norms is less than for some transsexual people. And then gender nonconforming is, I don't have any issue with my gender. I know who I am. I'm okay with being either male or female, but I don't want to obey by any norms that you guys are putting on me. Gender nonconforming pretty much says it. Whatever you decide that, you know, male or female is, or men or women, or feminine or masculine, I'll say, I don't care what you say. I'll do whatever I want and I'll identify the way I want to. And all those positions are valid, but they're all affected by this new regulation.
So what does this regulation mean for people who are traveling? I know that one of the biggest arguments against it is that there's no reports of people being affected by this regulation.
There is no report, which is very, very different from saying that there hasn't been any impact from this regulation as of yet. I think that anybody who's critical, and in a good way, but critical about regulation systems and societal norms, clearly understand that there's a game that, you know, everybody plays. So we play with statistic, we play with regulation, we play with understandings of regulation also. Right now, what Transport Canada and the Ministry of Transportation said is there's no complaint or there was no report of this. It doesn't mean that people haven't been turned away. It doesn't mean that people haven't decided not to take the plane or cancel their trip. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means that it's below Transport Canada radar. And obviously, I think that it's something that even us as activists and advocate, we have to look for. But it doesn't mean we'll be able to reach those people. I don't think that this argument is very strong, but it's been said anyway.
So there's an argument that this amendment is only going to affect a small number of people. Is that true?
If it would affect any people, I think we should worry about it. But I don't think it's true that we're going to affect only a small portion of people or a small, you know, any insignificant number of Canadians. That's not true, because it's asking, as I said earlier, to have somebody make a judgment to say if you're female or a male and if it matches your paper. For example, you go to the airport, so you're a chick, you're totally okay with it, but you have short hair, you wear men's clothes or baggy clothes, you don't look feminine to the person who's in front of you, so you will not board that plane. I don't want to tokenize, but I mean, we can use the example of, you know, masculine, female, or the stone butch. It doesn't have to be in the lesbian communities. And I think women will face this more than men. So the masculine woman might be prevented from boarding her plane, which is super silly. Because this regulation, something that is into law right now, is going to say that if your paper do not match the presented gender, you're not boarding the plane.
So if your papers don't conform with the socialized gender norms that are presented in society, you are not recognized as a valid male or female as classified by your papers.
Exactly, exactly. So if I obey by gender norms, if I think that those norms are valid, and if the norms that I obey by is very, very feminine or very, very masculine as portrayed by television or advertisement or whatever, and if you don't fit those norms, I will say you're not boarding the plane. So we're obeying by constructed social norm that are sort of silly from the start, right? Mm-hmm. But still, they're there.
If people have issues with their papers, why can they not change their passport to the gender they identify with?
The question is also one that is asked often. Why don't they just change their paper? Mm-hmm. If you say you're a woman or you say you're a man, why don't you change your paper? It's not that easy. Some people do want to change their paper. Some people within trans communities are in the long and tedious process, costly process to do this. It's a process that lasts a few years to be able to get to the point where, you know, all your papers are changed. And it costs a lot of money. It also involves surgical body modification. For a trans woman, it requires sex reassignment surgery. So you have to move from male genitals to women genitals to have your sex marker changed to female. For trans men, it includes a full hysterectomy. So although some people are going towards that, some people want to get those operation, and those choices are hugely valid, it doesn't mean that they will be able to get it within the time frame that match with any trip. It doesn't mean also that they'll be able to get it. So even those people who want to conform, who want to have their gender marker change, it's long, costly, and emotionally costly also. But that's only one portion of the trans communities. There's a whole bunch of people who say, do I want to be modified? And some people say, no, I don't want to. No, I don't want to modify my body. I don't want to have a sex reassignment surgery. I still identify as male or I still identify as female, but I'm totally okay with the body I have. And that's also super valid. So people saying, why don't you just change your paper, is only valid for one portion of trans communities. only when they get there. It's not a valid solution because it still excludes a whole bunch of people.
And for those people that want to change the marker of their paper, when is the validity recognized?
It varies from province to province, pretty much in length and accessibility of services. Some standard that are more or less followed is two letters from health professionals. So they have to go through counseling to get authoritative body to confirm that they have what is called gender dysphoria, which is the official diagnosis for people who don't feel okay with the gender that they were assigned at birth. It requires those two letters, and those letters already there are costly. You also have to live at least 1 year in your preferred gender, which also includes that you have to be able to present yourself as that gender. I often use the example of, you know, a person who have a very masculine body and want to assume their true identity, which is female. Well, those persons have to go through extensive modification and extensive practices to really be able to pass as female, so be seen by society as this female person that they are. So 1 year is the minimum. To get to that point, it still requires a lot of effort. You also have to be on hormones for at least, I think it's 6 months, depending, like I said, from province to province, but 6 months. So if you go for 6 months of therapy, or if you decide not to, or if you can't afford it, or if you don't have health coverage, then that's also, you know, a barrier that you have. So if you look at all those barriers, you might be living a transition that lasts anywhere from, you know, 2 to 5, 10, 15 years to be able to go through this transition before you can have this. And once you have your operation, they give you a nice little paper, but you still have to go through here in Quebec, le directeur de l'état civil, to say, yeah, issue my new identity. So they give you a paper, and then you have to go from agency to agency to modify your papers. So it's hugely long. It's a huge emotional toll on people. So sometimes you have to take a break. Sometimes you have to live your life a little bit. Concerning this regulation, through it all now, we're just putting a new discrimination against those people. One more thing that will block them from actually living just a normal life, just the life they want to live.
No, that's absolutely a valid point. So how does this regulation affect or infringe on human rights or the Canadian Charters of Rights and Freedoms?
Well, it infringes in one very obvious way, which is prevents people from being able to move from one place to another. It also doesn't recognize people's identity, and it also causes prejudice, which is one of the things that right now, the NDP has been trying to do in the last, at least for the last, I think, 5 years, trying to bring forward a bill to include trans and gender identity into the Charter of Right and the Criminal Code, including in the Charter of Right, transphobia, the same way, you know, sexual orientation and sexual identity is also in the Charter of Right. What the Harper government is doing right now by saying, no, we're going to leave that in, they're pretty much giving us a very, very strong indication of what they're going to do when the NDP is going to present that new bill, or when they're going to be the second reading of that bill in chamber. The ministry and the conservative MPs, when they were asked questions in chamber yesterday, they were pretty much snickering and laughing. Mm-hmm. It's a negation of people's identity. I'm not sure what else can be said about human rights than to say that one's identity is negated. You know, we can probably word it till kingdoms come, but it says it all.
So what does that mean for trans communities under the current government?
That's actually a good question. I think that what it means is it's just history repeating itself. Whatever fight were undertaken by gay and lesbian activist groups in the 70s and in the 80s and in the 90s, even today, that those fights, trans communities will have to start over and take them again. So we will have to build a stronger coalition. We will have to build national movement. I like to call that movement Trans Canadian. And we're going to have to build those movement and do something to advocate for the rights that we have to have, and just pretty much go with what international bodies are doing right now. We have the WPATH, which is World Professional Organization or Association for Trans Health, who's saying, stop asking for modifications, stop asking for a whole bunch of things when people want to change their gender. It's legitimate. It's true. It's there. You have the UN, who actually said the same thing. You have Australia, although they might be some problem with it, but still who's offering either male or female or nothing. So you have some people who are making some extremely positive effort, and then you have our present government saying, no, we're going to go the other way. We're not going to include them.
Okay, so Gabrielle, can you tell us a little bit what is being done to look into this amendment and to rectify this situation?
We have some allies within, you know, within the political system right now. The NDP has been a strong ally of trans communities for a very long time, as I mentioned earlier. They're pretty amazing. So they are presenting the bill C-279, as I was mentioning earlier, for inclusion of transsexual, transgender, and gender nonconforming or gender identity in the Charter of Rights. But also they've been asking questions in chamber to see, okay, Harper government, what are you going to do? Are you going to recognize that this is a problem? And what I find amazing is that they've been consulting trans communities and trans people and trans activists throughout Canada to make sure that they had it right. So they're really, really inclusive, and they're trying to make this better. So we have the NDP. We have Justin Trudeau, who also has been, you know, pretty vocal about it. So there's this political movement that's being built outside. There's a few medias who've picked it up, mostly blogs. We have The Star, who picked it up, but very, very few mainstream media actually picked it up. So, like, you guys are fracking awesome for doing this. But I think we'll build this movement because we have political allies right now, because we're super vocal about it. There's going to be this built up, and it's not going to end there. So we do have right now the NDP and Liberals. So it's a trans political party. It's also trans Canadian as a movement. People from BC, from Calgary, from Ontario, here in Quebec, we have people everywhere using every tool they have to be able to make this known and advocate against this amendment.
Okay, Gabrielle, thank you so much for being with us today and shedding some light on this very important issue.
You're welcome.
Listeners, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can contact Gabrielle. Her email is psa@centre2110.org. Again, Gabrielle, thank you so much for being with us today, and we'll definitely keep up on this issue.
Thank you very much for having me here.